What's up, y'all? This is Radio Free Nintendo, episode 96. And, well, I sound excited, don't I?
Yep.
I'm excited for the show!
Man, I'm psyched. Psyched, John.
James Jones, come on down!
One,
you're
hey,
the next contestant
everybody.
On Radio Free Nintendo! Okay. Okay. Greg's here also.
Wait.
And John is back.
Yay! Yes.
Booyah!
Yay!
This intro is not nearly as good as the one that we did before I realized that I wasn't recording.
Well, you know, if you remembered to
man,
record,
what a
you
shame.
Wouldn't have that.
So, anyway, yeah, we got the whole crew back, and we have a good show for you. We're going to have a solid block of new business, and then we'll get into lots of listener mail that has been accumulating over the past few weeks. So, let's start with James.
Hey.
What you got, dog?
All right, well, I did some more unlocking of challenges in Brawl pretty uneventfully. Only played a little bit. Greg has neglected to give you his weekly update as to how long
yeah.
it's been since we got the game and Europe doesn't have a release date.
It's more bi-weekly now, and this is week 7, so I guess we're going
week
with odd numbers.
Week 7.
And, yeah, it's pretty pathetic. I mean, they're the Mario Kart's out over here, and they can't even, you know, I thought maybe they wouldn't want to, you know, steal its thunder with Brawl release dates before it's out, but now it is. Come on. Come on. Just get on with it. How long is it going to be?
I know why they haven't announced it. It's because they're not sure when they're going to have enough, because they sold, like, 2.5 friggin' million copies in America.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive.
In, like, 2 weeks.
Yeah.
In March. That is pretty impressive stuff. But, you know, it just amused me when I saw that, you know, the Dojo blog was finally coming to an end after, like, 300 updates and all that. And then all that, and you can't even get a European release date in all that time. That's pretty sad.
Jeez. Yeah.
Anyway,
well,
James,
if,
your new business.
Yeah, it's my new business. God. Let's see. I played a little bit of what just came in today for review. Pokemon Mystery Dungeon Explorers of Darkness. Which is a Pokemon Mystery Dungeon title. And
does anybody care about this game?
Apparently Nintendo cared enough to send us two copies of it. Yeah, we got a copy of both versions of the game. Explorers of Darkness and I think the other one's Explorers of Time. So apparently Nintendo thinks we care enough to send us two copies of the same game, essentially.
Isn't it kind of the same game as the one they put on GBA like 2 years ago?
Yeah. Well, it was actually a mixed release. One version was a GBA and one version was a DS game.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
So what's the difference here?
I guess it's just another iteration of the series.
And does it just get
yeah,
things...
Well, what's the difference?
Does it kind of catch things up with the whole Diamond and Pearl monsters and stuff? Is that, like, the most... Just like an update with roster update, almost?
Well, there are Diamond and Pearl monsters in it. I'm not certain if there weren't any last time. It uses the Wi-Fi connection probably much more thoroughly than the last game did, since it was a GBA game. I don't know what the primary difference is between the other versions. It's probably slightly graphically more powerful. And 490-plus Pokemon appear, or so says the box.
Wow.
So, ooh, 490. I'll be sure to count them. I'm going to hold them
yeah,
to
Pale,
that.
Pale would just love that.
If
Pale's
I see...
the only guy I know that actually found every single Pokemon in Pokemon Diamond and Pearl.
That's
did he really?
That is sickening.
Good grief.
Yeah, seriously, he said it took him like what? Like something like 250 game hours?
Oh my,
oh my
god.
Oh god.
I would
that is insane.
I would break down and cry at some point as I was trying to pull that off.
Mm-hmm. You know, I played Melee for like 300 game hours, but that was with another human being.
and over how many years?
Exactly. Over the course of like 4 or 5 years, and that was mostly social gaming. Like we were actually interacting, you know.
So.
That's not sitting on my couch or sitting on the bus playing.
You can
kind
of.
There's no way. There's no way you get in 250 hours on the bus. That's like sitting on your toilet, sitting on your couch, playing Pokemon.
Yeah,
all
a lot
the time.
Of it's probably just stuff
and
like.
Pale's engaged.
It's probably... that's the whole thing. It's like he's not like he's some you know. college student dude, single, just sitting in his dorm room. Dude's engaged, and seriously, and the thing is, too, he racked up those game hours in, like, 6 months kind of thing.
Yeah, that's...
I think he's playing at work.
That's
scary.
I think he's leased it out to, just like one of those gold farms they have out in China. Just find me all the Pokemon, man. Just find them all for me.
He's buying achievement points.
Some of that's got to be just
like
cycling
4 cents
back
an hour.
And forth to like hatch eggs or something without even looking at the system. I just can't imagine how else you could spend that much time playing the game.
I actually did that back in Silver, I think. I just rigged up this little piece of plastic that let me just sort of hold my thumb on it and just shake it a little bit, and it caused the D-pad to move up and down really fast. It was like the height of my engineering prowess in middle school.
Nice. Okay, well, so have you started playing
Mystery
Dungeon 2?
I have started playing Mystery Dungeon for about 6 minutes. I played it long enough to get the... There, it just fell off my desk. I've played it long enough to get the personality trait quiz done. And from six questions, I'm going to list to you everything it decided about me. I have a subdued type personality. Okay. I'm naive, which is kind of funny, considering I slam Nintendo every 4.5 minutes. I have a strong curiosity, and I state my opinion despite the fact that it might not make people happy around me or be popular.
Despite the fact that it's wrong.
Oh, you're just being hurtful now. I have an artistic spirit that isn't constrained by social conventions.
Okay.
And, I have a strong personality with high spontaneity, but when I overdo it, people can have a hard time keeping up with me.
Mm-hmm.
I have an earth brown aura, and the game, my aura, which it deduced from me pressing my finger against the screen while it made some lovely ripple effects, is earth browned.
Nice.
And then the personality quiz ended with the game asking me, somewhat insultingly, if I have, quote, noticed people looking at you oddly.
What kind of question is that? Jesus. He's trying to deduce whether you're paranoid or something.
It didn't even ask for my answer. It was just, like, rhetorical, which made it even more insulting, really.
Oh, wow.
I want to go back to this earth-ground aura thing.
Brown.
That sounds like the kind of thing a random hippie would tell you at Bonnaroo as you walk by.
The color, not...
You have a beautiful aura of the earth.
Brown,
are you sure it was
brown.
Earth brown and not other adjectives?
Earth brown.
Okay.
Right. As opposed to the other kinds of brown.
Doo-doo brown?
Yes. Oh, we had to go there, didn't we?
That's like the most childish thing I've ever said on this podcast.
Just wait.
Yeah, I haven't gotten into it beyond
that.
Yeah, so
that,
wait
a minute,
wait
a minute.
Assuring
this is
me...
for the purposes of making you a Pokemon, right? You assume the form
yes.
of a Pokemon based on the answers to these questions.
Yes, I have been awarded with the Pokemon of Chimchar.
Oh, Chimchar. Well, fair enough. He's...
Yes, I am...
See,
a...
I always thought that Chim...
same one that Gabe from Pinocchio.
I always
Kate
thought
got.
That Chimchar
oh, okay.
was the kind of Pokemon who had an artistic spirit that was constrained by social convention. But there you go.
I guess you just interpreted him wrong.
Yeah, what can I say? You know, there's only so many pixels in those Diamond and Pearl representations. So you know,
maybe you caught him on a bad
day. I'm working with limited info here. You know.
And then I had to pick my partner, which I'm trying to remember what that Pokemon's name is. The grass star Turtwig. There we go.
Yeah.
I picked Turtwig because I figured if I'm Chimchar, I can keep his ass in line.
I'll burn you. I will burn you.
You're already playing this game the way it's meant to be played.
Oh, God.
Don't fuck around with me, man. I'll burn your ass. I don't even know. All right,
so you haven't actually, like, played the real game yet.
No.
Played anything else?
Yes, I played Trackmania Legends Forever, I believe the free version is.
It's Trackmania Nations Forever.
Nations Forever, sorry.
Yeah.
Trackmania Nations Forever, and I've basically been playing on servers with the most wonky courses there is, or are.
Yeah.
Ones that are like, clear this jump, and then you have to clear six more jumps before you actually touch track again. And crazy
exactly,
things like that.
Yes.
Or spend half the race upside down in first person mode and try not to vomit from motion sickness.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been playing this too. This is a free online racing game you can get for the PC, and it looks really nice. It's
fun.
It's basically played like a time trial thing. So like when you play it online with other people, there's no collision detection. You just go through them. They're basically like ghosts. And the servers that I played on, you'd get like say 3 minutes per track, and the track only takes like 45 seconds to go through if you actually make it to the end without crashing. So the idea is that you go through the track as many times as you can in those 3 minutes and try to set the best time, and whoever sets the best time before the time limit is up wins.
Yeah,
or something. And it keeps track of your ranking among the other people in the group.
Yeah, the track I was playing on today, or one of them, was about 3.5 minutes long, and if you screwed up at any point, you had to basically completely start over because the checkpoints aren't at points where you can continue.
Lovely design.
Yeah,
there.
It was.
Yeah, that's kind of one of the things is like, I think Trackmania, you know, it has a bunch of tracks built in that are pretty good, but it kind of the appeal of it is that it has this editor, and you can make your tracks and get other people to race on them. And yeah, the server I played on, the guy had some pretty terrible tracks going, and I finally just left, and I told the guys, like, thanks for hosting, dude, but these tracks blow, and I'm not having fun, so bye.
Yeah, there was a couple that seemed to be designed in such a way that you'd be angry at them, but just the ways that it screwed you over were almost hilarious. Because there was one where, like, it basically was about, according to game distance, it was 2.5 kilometers of just solid boost pads on a straightaway, and then you hit this ramp, and it launched you, like, you could see people ahead of you when you're way back. You could just see a tiny little image of a car going flying through the sky, and you realize, oh god, there's a ramp coming up. And you'd hit it, and you'd go flying, you'd go end over end, and all of a sudden you slammed into the track above you and came crashing back to the ground. And the only way to deal with it was to actually be going in reverse when you hit the top part, so your wheel would grip the top part and you wouldn't come down upside down.
What?
Because apparently your wheel will hit that. He apparently spent so much time designing a track, he figured out exactly how your car will hit that top part. So he made it so you had to hit reverse so you wouldn't come falling down. The physics engine is somewhat predictable, so you can learn what you have to do in some of these tracks, but it is...
Yeah, the physics is interesting, I think.
Yeah.
What I like about the game is that there like are no cars to tune or even to choose from. Like, there's really one car.
Right, unless you
and
get the
so,
the
yeah, so, like,
versions.
Your time, the object of the game is to get the fastest time around the track, and it's based purely on skill. It's like, how well can you take this corner, and how well can you exploit the jumping physics, basically.
Yeah. There was one track that was designed to mimic how some tourney fans, as we refer to them on this show, from Brawl view how to play Melee, and the track was actually called Final Destination. It was perfectly flat, but it was constant boost pads with these narrowing points in the track and those stupid one and two pillars just everywhere you had to weave in and out of.
Ugh.
And he was referring to those as items and how items were screwing over your game.
Like a weird social Smash Brothers commentary.
Yeah, but it was actually playing the Final Destination theme, which made it actually harder to complete the track. And just everybody in the bottom was just swearing like crazy. Almost... Damn it, I hit another pillar. You have to start over. It was horrible. But it was amusing in the ways you could get screwed over by a pillar.
Well, okay, yeah. So I think James and I will both agree this is a game you should check out. I actually probably had the most fun playing solo, not online. Just trying to get medals, because that's really addictive.
Yeah, there are a lot of challenges you can complete just through the medals.
Yeah. But it's a really fun game. It's totally free. Like, there's not even advertising or anything. I got it through Steam. Is that how you got it, James?
Yeah, I got it through Steam.
Yeah, so if you have a decent PC for gaming...
it's only about 1.3 gigahertz.
You should have Steam anyway. And get on there and download Trackmania Nations Forever. It's fun, and it's free.
Yeah.
So.
There is a pay version of it called Trackmania Nations... I can't remember.
I think it's Trackmania United.
Yeah, that's it. And
yeah,
that's
the one Wendy has.
Yeah, you can play with all the people who have it, but I think the things they get, they might get some more challenges. I know they get more cars, and I think you can use custom created cars too. Like, I saw somebody who had a car that looked like a Lego man driving some Lego blocks, It was really bizarre. Cool. Every time he'd pass, he'd be like, what the hell?
That's cool. All right, Greg, you're up next.
Yeah, so it's been all Mario Kart this week, really. I just got finished doing my review of the game today, the day recording. I presumably everyone will have had a few days to read it by the time this podcast goes out.
They might need a few days to read it.
Yeah. Oh, it's not that long.
It's voluminous.
I actually looked at this after John made his Buffalo Bills deriding crack about how long it was.
Yes.
And it's about 400 words. The main text is about 400 words longer than Johnny's Double Dash review. So there you go. That's a bit of context for you. In terms of how long it is. But, yeah, I mean, it's a weird kind of game in terms of, in some ways, there's not that much to say, funnily enough, in terms of it's Mario Kart, much the same as it's ever been. But, on the other hand, you can get into, you know, I think for our listenership and our readership on the site and all that, people want to know about the sort of the nuts and bolts differences. I mean, the details.
Minutiae.
You know, people have, having played previous games of the series, like a lot of our readership is going to have, they have context for the technical details that will actually, you know, let them sort through it in a way that means something to them and get some idea of what the experience is going to be like. And
yeah, I mean, if you've never played the game, all you really need to know about it can be told by a weird-looking guy dressed up as a cowboy waving the Wii wheel in your face.
Yes, that commercial
the,
scares
American
the crap
TV
out of
him.
There you go. That's how they communicate.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been the standardized approach over here, pretty much just people in front of a TV together racing with some game footage spliced in. That's it. Nothing
high concept. I'm going to do my impression of that commercial, which I've only seen once so far. You need to turn the wheel, you need to boost the wheel. Just like, what the hell is this crap?
Bring back the two Japanese guys,
yeah,
please.
Really. I thought that was like the whole point of that, was that, well, you know, it's sort of, the adverts themselves are almost not as important as like the sort of Wii branding that unites them all. That was the only way I could kind of rationalise the Metroid Prime 3 situation. But now it seems they've forgotten that and just gone off on whatever random marketing company whim has led them to that. That's kind of scary.
But, I mean, it was intentionally designed to look bad, but in a way they managed to make it bad in spite of their attempts to make it comically bad. It's bizarre. There's actually a local used car company that produces horrific ads that are still somewhat more watchable than that.
Nice. That's...
And their ads involve a dog.
Yeah, the part
dancing
I saw actually
Superman
did kind
costume.
Of remind me of like a local used car lot commercial.
Yeah, that's what they're going for, I think.
Yeah.
Harsh,
anyway.
Yeah.
But... So you're still playing Mario Kart then. Do you think you will continue to play it now that you've played it pretty
thoroughly?
Yeah,
I mean, at this point,
and have written extensively about it.
At this point, I've, you know, completed every cup on every class, and, you know, I've done quite a lot of time trial stuff, and obviously played some online, and I'm sure I'll keep playing online, and it'll get better once the influx of North American players come on, you know, once the game comes out. So, and the online, I mean, the two big things to come out of it really for me are the online functionality is very good, and within the sort of, you know, the constraints that, you know, seem pretty solid at the minute with Nintendo Online in terms of no voice chat and sort of still holding on to the friend code architecture, it really does pretty much everything it could. I mean, you've got the ability to swap. Thanks to one of our forum members, Pluggerbugs, for testing out the Wii invite, the sort of friend code exchange. You can indeed do that so that you don't actually have to input a single digit to register a friend code if you've already exchanged.
Assuming
there. So that's great. Yeah. That's something that should have happened before, really. If you can do this now, why weren't you doing it before? But it is here.
I have one thing about that.
Yeah.
One concern about this system they've implemented. They implemented this essentially friend code exchange system, but they completely branded it in the Mario Kart Wii system. Does that mean that we're going to have to get different systems for future games? Couldn't they have just created a catch-all system?
Yeah, I know what you mean. I mean, that you'd still prefer something that was more unified. You know, the time to do that was at the outset of the system's life, really. I mean,
yes,
clearly
yes,
they're not going to do that for whatever reason, but at least this has some sort of interface with the Wii, your Wii console and the Wii number, and you know, if other games in the future do, I mean, with the space crisis already hitting most of us, as it is, I'm not sure whether we'll want to, you know, have some sort of, you know, Wii menu channel to install for every single game to do this kind of stuff. But you can have it inside the disc as well.
Yeah, it just seems superfluous to create the system for one game.
Well, but like I said, I hope this is going to be the standard from now on. But yeah, it would work better if it were unified, but it's not going to be. But it's still better than absolutely having to enter digits every single time.
Yeah.
So, well, the others. You don't honestly think they're going to give this to third parties, though?
No, but I could, even if it was just for Nintendo systems.
But I mean, EA games. Have kind of already done their own kind of circumventing of it, haven't they? With
yeah,
the EA
right.
Nation and stuff. So maybe they'll leave third parties to sort of do that themselves.
Yeah, maybe we'll end up with like 18 different ways to connect with people online for our Wii.
Well, you know, the PS2 did that.
I mean, it just seems
though.
Like they just make it up as they go along.
Yeah, it's ad hoc. Yeah.
It's totally game by game.
It's totally ad hoc. But at least in this case, it's better than it has been. And in terms of the actual gameplay online, it functions very well. Even with the 12 players, I mean, the random matches. You know, it's fluid. You're not waiting around. You get into it, and it's fun. It's just fun to get in there, race. You know, very simple. You know, not really have to think about setting things up or anything. Just get in there and compete. And you can get little rivalries going if people stay in. You know, because you can see their me and things. So, you know, they are, and it's just effective. And then, of course, once the friends thing kind of kicks in. You'll be able to enjoy that part of it as well. So it is a really good online setup. It's certainly leagues ahead of the Mario Kart DS, which you're limited to four competitors at once, and the matchmaking seemed to take quite a while a lot of the time, and you couldn't even drag items behind you, could you? Which obviously is like quite important part of the game.
Yeah, the online play in DS was kind of gimped. Like there were certain tracks that you couldn't.
Yeah, there was 20.
And
there was only 20 tracks and things. So yeah, I mean this is full featured by comparison, and really does extend the appeal of the game. But on the flip side, there is the fact that really not a lot of attention has been paid to making it a unique or particularly compelling experience purely on the console, local multiplayer, whatever. Because, of course, one of the real downsides of losing of sticking to the DS template is you're losing the co-op play of Double Dash. Which,
right.
Yeah, that's how I played with my friend Taylor.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the thing is, obviously, you're never going to do that on a handheld because, like, that kind of co-op is just not wouldn't work quite the same. It wouldn't have the same kind of appeal when you're not in front of the same system or, you know, if something
right.
telly or whatever. But in this case, you know, so now you've got a console game and it's like, well, you know, you're sticking to a handheld formula when you could be pushing beyond that a bit. You know, and it really doesn't. I mean, for me, I think one of the big problems I've got with the game is just the design is kind of a bit lazy in the sense that it really doesn't get in there and tailor things and change things for the different modes. So it's like, okay, you want the blue shell in versus races so that, you know, the guy that's better than than all of his friends doesn't get too far ahead. Fine. Why is it in the one-player game? Why does it have to be in the one-player game? You know? I mean,
so the computers can make you really angry.
Yeah, it's just like, I dread to think that I might tread all over the self-esteem of these AI racers. You know what I mean? It's just just ridiculous. It has no place in there. It's just laziness. They just haven't said, well, the one player has a different kind of, you know, has a different kind of appeal, has different aims to it, so let's get in there and actually alter the design to reflect that. Well, they don't do it. And I mean,
the blue shell really is the worst thing that's ever happened to Mario Kart. It's just a bad
And it's actually gotten
item.
Worse.
It's very
hasn't
poorly
it? Because,
designed.
I mean, I've got dim memories of 64 at this point, but wasn't it less inevitably destructive? Like in terms of
it was very
because it kind of
in the
I think it kind of
version,
like went along the floor and it wasn't actually guaranteed to even hit the guy in first or something. Whereas that
yeah, but you know, my problem with it is that you only get it if you're like in nearly last place.
Yeah.
In which case, taking out the number one guy doesn't make it doesn't
yeah,
do
I mean,
you any good.
I think
good.
In this
race,
one,
you're only
really
you're not, it doesn't help you move up.
Indeed.
It just helps the guy
indeed.
Who's
and
in third
no,
place move up
no
first.
There's no active role in it. There's no participatory element to it in terms of the guy.
Exactly. It's fire
either
forget.
The guy
there's
launching
no
it or
involved.
The guy trying to avoid it. Because some of
the
new
the
items.
Fact that the
Oh, go on, James.
In the DS version.
It's like welfare. It's like a food stamp that you can only use to buy bread for another family who makes more money than you do.
Let's stay out of the realm of politics here.
Well,
if they gave you the blue shell when you're in second or third place, I would be like, yeah, but remember, that makes sense. That's a good idea.
In the DS version, that shell explodes when it hits the ground, and I've seen it take out two or three cars at one time. I mean,
it's possible, but if you're in eighth place, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, well, that's the thing.
Now
you're talking about a bigger field and the people of 12 and the people that commonly get the blue shell now, I think, although usually, you know, the AI opponents aren't really good enough on their own to prevent you from getting in the lead. You know, so you don't spend a lot, you know, you're in the lead, you get hit with something, you're back in the pack, you get one item, you're in the lead again. You know, it's just like that the whole time. You personally, Ben, will hardly ever get the blue shell, you know, either. But I'm pretty sure you get it in the lower middle of the pack. So again, it might take out the first three guys, but you've still got 4, 5, and 6 ahead of you that then just... So it just doesn't
In the DS version, I would actually intentionally fall back and get it, and then just... sort of pick up on them and launch it while I was in third near the end of the race. Just
you explore. Yeah,
there are certain opportunities to game the system, but I mean in the 12 player scenario and with all the other items, and there are a lot of them that, you know, create various shenanigans. You know, it's really the best way is still to race properly and hope that that will win the day, and it will, but it's probabilistic. And, you know, needlessly so. And it's just, it's especially because, and I note this in the review, that they still don't have the ability to retry. So you could go 3 races, win them all, then on the last race get completely shafted by a succession of item strikes. It's just like, I thought I was playing with Yoshi, not Dick Dastardly. By the amount of just absolute, you know, comical consecutive strikes on your person. You roll in 12th, and then the guy that you were blowing away in the points competition beats you by 1. And you've wasted your time. You've just gone through 4 races for absolutely nothing. And it's just like, it's just pointless. Why not at least give you at least one opportunity to say, okay, I got completely screwed over in that race. Give me one more chance and maybe I'll get lucky and not get...
Right, you can do that in F-Zero.
Exactly, and F-Zero is a hardcore experience. You know, I mean, F-Zero...
You have to have that in F-Zero. F-Zero is like being terminally beaten constantly. I mean, you'll be like, hey, I'm doing greatness. Oh, God. And then you fall in and it's over. And you lose.
Right. That's only on the tracks where you can get knocked off the track, though.
So
and that is brutal. And that, what they really need is like a little Lakitu to pick you up and take you back, and then you pay him 2 coins.
Yeah, well.
But you know, the point is, if you can have retries
like
in something as brutal as F-Zero, Mario Kart, it just seems like you should have them. And my point is really that it's just a certain... indifference to actually, well, hang on a minute, what does work in what context, you know? And in the context of the one player game, some of these items, some of these dynamics, they just don't work, and yet they're left in there unattended anyway, and the consequences of, you know, irritants ensue. So it's that part of it's annoying. And the other part now is that this separation between online and local multiplayer has really emerged. And like I said, you know, not having the co-op, I think. I mean, why couldn't you have a separate kind of co-op class of Grand Prix that you could go into and have a sort of separate tailored experience for that crowd that would make local multiplayer more fun? I mean, it's a console game.
It seems fairly simple.
It's a
to
console
do.
Game.
And,
I mean, give
and,
us more.
You know, even with the motorcycles, you could add a little sidecar.
Yeah, you could do it if you want. Look, the point is, they could do it. They could get in there and say, let's really tailor this stuff to the different needs of, you know, different scenarios where you played it, but they haven't. It's just like, this is the game, one size fits all, and, you know, what context does it work best in for you, and that's going to be online. And if you don't have you know, access to online, and you've already played Mario Kart DS or Double Dash or whatever else, I don't really see what this is going to give you.
All right. Well,
okay.
Can I make one more question?
You do like the game, right?
I mean, let's be honest. I like Mario Kart as a concept. You know, there's plenty of enjoyment to be had. And then,
it's not everything it could have been.
But exactly. And I just think at this stage in its life, where you know, you've got to a point where the handheld series is one thing, you know, which is very good. It's at a high level. The console game's got to up the ante. And apart from the online functionality, the only way they've really upped the ante, apart from a few nice like tweaks to the gameplay and some of the new items are more sort of positive additions than the like stuff like the blue shell, because they're actually kind of active. You actually do stuff with them, like the thunder cloud that you pass on, or like the power block which you can actually skip to avoid and stuff like that. But other than those kind of little tweaks, it really doesn't do anything to the game at all. And you know, it just seems like, well, it's a console version. Let's take it beyond what it's been before. But the real difference, I guess, is in the marketing. It's just like, well, it's our Wii. It's got a little wheel. Go forth and buy.
Well, one question, real quick.
All right, we need to move on here, James.
Yeah, I just wanted to know real quick. Is there any method of communication in multiplayer matches with friends?
It's just that you've got the sort of like lobby kind of text chatty kind of thing, predetermined text chat phrases. That's it.
Ugh.
Give me a break. It's so lame.
It's weak.
But see, the funny thing is,
it's better than nothing. It'll keep me from having to run back to my computer in the other room.
But the funny thing is, there was voice chat in multiple DS games just a little bit over a year ago, and then we're down to like pre-scripted conversation and chat room stuff and.
Yeah,
on a console.
On a console, this late in its life, it is bad. I mean, and I've referenced that in the review. It's just, it is very disappointing. But as long as they're not gonna release a peripheral or whatever, then I guess it's not gonna happen.
Yeah, I guess not.
Well, you know, it's just that Nintendo's really want to take their time and make sure that their Wii branded USB headset is just
you're gonna
right.
get it to just the right size shade of white.
And they have to make a nice,
we do need to move on, guys.
Game for it.
We're taking a long time here, but there will be a lot more Mario Kart Wii discussion to come, as I should be getting my copy this week, and then you guys will get yours next week. So there will be more to come on this. There's plenty of time to talk about it. So for my new business, I did play Trackmania along with James. We haven't played together yet, but I don't have to talk about that now that he has. And also on the PC, I played a couple hours of Team Fortress 2. This was like last Friday night. I played with the NeoGAF group on Steam. They're like the only friends I have on Steam because I don't know very many PC gamers.
I'm on Steam,
so
dude.
That was you.
Yeah,
I
am. Yep.
We got to hook up, dog. Yep. We'll do that. Do you have Orange Box?
Yes, I do, sir.
Dude.
Yes, I do.
I'm really quite bad at Team Fortress 2, so
it's definitely a learning
I need to
experience.
Get on there with some more console noobs and. Yeah.
It's a definite learning experience. Oh, good. I can just destroy both of you then. Thumbs up.
Oh, you have it too, James?
Yes. Yeah. I've talked about it on the show, man.
Wow, group hugs this. Jesus.
Okay. Yeah, anyway, so we'll do that. We should have a Team Fortress night and we'll talk about it on the show.
Yeah.
But that was fun. I think this time I played the soldier with the rocket launcher most of the time. And that's fun because you can actually kind of get a few kills even if you're not good with that. Whereas if you're playing as, say, the medic, which is what I usually do because I think it's the most interesting class, but I'm really bad at it. Mm-hmm. And I don't really understand what I'm doing wrong with the medic. And the pyro also. I'm really bad with pyro.
Pyro is a very much practice class. There's a lot of strategy in doing well with the pyro that you have to work with.
Yeah, medics and also the thing is, I don't know the maps that well. There's one that I've played the most. I think it's called the Gulch or something like that. That has that kind of river in the middle with a bridge through the that goes over it, and that's the one I've played the most. And then we went to another map, and all of a sudden I had no idea where I was or where I was supposed to go. So I need to play it more and learn more about that because they're adding some stuff pretty soon, like the new weapons for the medics and a new map and a new mode.
Well,
so
there's a lot of user-created maps in that game too, and some of them are actually a whole lot of fun to play on because there's.
Yeah, I have no idea how to find those.
You just go to the server and it downloads automatically if you don't have the map. And
okay.
Yeah, you can like write some pretty sophisticated scripting for how things happen on a map. Like there's one that's on two moving trains, and the entire map is the two trains, and you have to jump between them.
That's awesome.
It's kind of a rough map to play on because if you miss the jump, you're a dead man.
Do you know? Are there a lot of user created maps for Portal?
I'm not sure.
I'd like to check that out, but I haven't heard anything about it.
There got to be some because I'm pretty sure the last iteration of the Half-Life 2 toolkit did include portal items, but I'm not positive of that.
Well, yeah, I definitely remember seeing some video of some people who hacked the portal gun into Half-Life 2.
Oh my god, that would break the game.
I didn't even buy. I mean, it was cool, but I didn't even bother trying it because it totally breaks the game, and it's like not really fun anymore. Like you're throwing trash can. The thing was, the AI couldn't see through the portals.
Oh yeah.
He was like picking things up with a gravity gun and shooting them through the portal at the AI, and the AI couldn't figure out what was going on. It's like, why did this chair just come out of the wall? You know. So it's really, really breaks the game. But hopefully episode 3 is going to include the portal gun. Well, that seems to be the consensus that it will.
See, I was thinking actually, but anyway, that wasn't going to come until Half-Life 3, which is what they seem to have iterated, that it's going to come in at some point. But where they're going to bring it in, who knows. But
yeah,
episode 3 is when it's ready, so 6 to 8 years.
Half-Life 3 will be around 2030.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, I did finish Portal the second time through. That was a lot of fun. I played through it faster the second time. I guess I just kind of knew. I didn't specifically remember how to beat things, but I think I just kind of was more comfortable with a lot of the concepts.
Right. You've seen this kind of puzzle before.
What?
You've seen that kind of puzzle before, so you can figure out what you have to do.
Yeah. I was just a little more aware of the way the world is put together. But anyway, that was fun. And on the Wii, I don't have a DS, so on the Wii, I played some Galaxies, Geometry Wars Galaxies. And at this point, what I'm doing is I'm kind of going through there and, like, finding all the bronze medals, because I have a medal on everything now. So what I'm doing is going through and finding all the bronze medals and trying to get those up to silver. And then eventually I'll go through and try to get all those up to gold.
Nice.
And that's really, I mean, it sounds kind of blah. If you haven't played the game, it's actually really addictive and motivating to go through and do that. And it gives you an excuse to play it for 2 hours at a time, which is what I do. So, did some of that. Did not play any more Galaxy. But I did play some Brawl with TYP. We had some nasty lag. I mean, really bad. And he and I don't live that far away from each other. And we've played before, and it wasn't too bad. But it was really bad this time, so I don't know what the deal was. I really don't. We had some matches where it literally got down into, like, not only, like, one frame per second, but, like, you'd see a frame go, and then you'd wait 3 seconds, and then another frame would go. And I'd sit there and stare at it for, like, 20 seconds, and then all of a sudden, it would just be right back up to normal speed.
Yep.
It was really, really inconsistent, so we did have some fun despite that, but it was pretty frustrating.
Well, you know, it's funny because I had a forum goer, Professional 666, rip some video for me for the feature I'm working on. And, you know, they were playing their Patriots match, Australia versus California, and it was going great.
Really?
It just blows my mind.
Wow.
you can't get TYP, but they're able to play some dude in Australia.
See, I don't even think it's so much the ping or the connections. I think it's bad netcode. It probably has as much to do with anything. It probably has to do with Nintendo servers and how many people are playing on the servers at that time of day.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just bizarre.
There's no telling. It's just really shitty netcode. Because if Greg is telling us that 12 people can race on Mario Kart at the same time and it's really smooth, you know, I know Smash Brothers is a busy game. There's a lot of stuff going on. But 2 people playing Smash Brothers does not compare to 12 people playing Mario Kart.
Well, I mean,
one of the
sort of explanations for why Mario Kart runs quite well is that it makes sort of heavy use of kind of predictive stuff, you know, with that you can sort of get away with racing games. Although, I mean, it does so very sort of seamlessly. You don't see that kind of glitching where they kind of, you know, jostle between two sort of positions at once, where it's, you know, where there's like a lag and it's trying to interpret it or anything. So if it is using that kind of predictive stuff to make it seem sort of appear smooth when it perhaps isn't, it does so very well. I'll say that.
Yeah, I don't know. It's not. This isn't about dropped frames, though. I mean, we're having Brawl matches that are unplayable.
Yeah, putting the game on pause.
They're just coming to a standstill, and there's a. I don't know. I don't understand. All I can say is that the netcode must be really, really bad. Because there are plenty of online games that are almost or just as intense as Smash Brothers, just as wacky with as much stuff going on.
Well, I mean, Mario
Strikers
and
they don't have nearly this kind of lag.
And that was fairly acceptable in my experience.
Well, just Mario Kart is busy. I mean, look at what's going on. You have 12 race cars on there. You have blue shells flying around breaking the game.
You got banana peels all over the track and all kinds of stuff.
True. Yeah.
It's keeping track of green shells that keep bouncing for 45 seconds after you shoot them.
Yes, just bounce
back
and forth.
There's a lot of stuff going on, you know, and I just don't buy the argument that Smash Brothers is such a complicated game that, you know, Virtua Fighter 5 is online, and it doesn't have, I haven't heard anything like the problems that we're having with Brawl.
No, it's amazing.
Now, it's a much simpler game. You're not shooting fireballs and throwing wacky things at each other, but that's a game that demands, like, frame-by-frame precision.
Right, that's its big
and
deal.
And people seem to be fairly happy with it.
Yeah, well.
You know? Like, if they can do it, why can't Nintendo with Brawl? If Nintendo can do it with Mario Kart, why can't Nintendo do it with Brawl? That's what pisses me off. I mean, if you're going to get your shit right, do it with Smash Brothers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe they just felt like they didn't need to get it right. I mean, 2.2 million copies sold in 4 weeks.
It was 2.7,
apparently.
Was it?
Oh, was it? Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, extra mil on that. That's quite a lot. It's like pretty much what Metroid Prime 3 Corruption sold in total that you've cut off it there.
Yeah.
Well,
the one game where we really wanted to get online.
It's not as much it was sold by Carnival Games. And once we get into Carnival Games discussion, we can talk about bigness of loss.
I want to see that online.
Once that you can teabag it.
See, why can't that be a slideshow?
Chicken shoot
John,
online.
What is your new business, sir?
My new business, I'm still playing through Ninja Gaiden Dragon Sword. And just a couple more thoughts on that. I have beef with their the way that they've kind of set up the save points. They'll do annoying stuff like at least especially before the first boss. The whole way it's set up is that, you know, in all of those games, what they tend to do is to make it hard. They throw you into a room with like 20 guys, and it's just a never-ending onslaught of people to fight. So what they do before the first boss is they have a save point that's just before this room with like 20 guys in it. So after you go through this room of 20 guys, then you have to fight the boss. So you've basically been weakened already by this massive room of dudes that you have to fight through. You go to the boss kills you, then you go back to the save point, and you have to do the room full of guys and the boss all over again. Why can't they just...
Why can't you go back to the save point after you kill the 20 guys?
That's exactly it. Well, that's the thing. The save point is before the room, right? So
wait, you can't go back, though?
No. No. Uh-huh. I mean, the thing
closed.
Is, like, the room with 20 guys and the boss are all one room in a way.
Sequence.
So you have to do them both at once. So
that's
it's pretty annoying. There's some parts like that are fairly cheap, but it's still pretty good. I'm kind of pleased with it. Other stuff I've been playing, I actually it's funny. I've kind of found cheap versions of all these games just because this is all the stuff that we haven't been getting review copies for. Curse you companies. I also picked up Pro Evo Soccer 2008 for Wii, which is, I must say, I'm not a soccer fan in the least, but that's an amazing soccer game. And anybody that is even remotely interested in soccer really ought to play that. Really should buy it, actually, because it has a ton of features and the controls are amazing on it.
Wendy was really singing its praises last week.
Yeah, I mean, the way it controls is really interesting because, you know, I'm used to the EA Sports soccer games where, you know, you just move a guy with a joystick and, you know, kick with the X button, whatever. But the way it works in Pro Evo Soccer is you have a pointer on the screen, and basically wherever you want to pass to, you click on the screen. And so, so you use B.
Yeah, John,
to click.
You should listen to last week's episode.
Oh, did he go through that? Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's awesome. Well, I can say that it actually does play really, really well. And the thing is, it's the only soccer game I've ever played where you can just pick it up and learn it. And you really don't need to know a lot about soccer. So.
That's cool. That's a big difference between, like, anytime I try to play somebody's copy of Madden, I have to stare at the controls for, like, 5 minutes in the instruction manual.
Yep.
And then I start to play it, and then the buttons don't do what I thought they did. Mm-hmm. And then And then the other guy gets the ball, and now I'm on defense, and all the buttons do different things.
Yeah, well, the great...
It's like the controls in sports games are insanely complicated these days, especially EA's games.
Yep.
And, like, Madden has uses every single button on the controller mm-hmm. and has modifiers and stuff, and then it has a completely separate scheme for offense, defense, and special teams.
Yep.
So basically every 30 seconds, the controls change.
Yeah, that's...
And the button mapping is totally different. It's like, how is this a casual game? Like, how is this a mass market game?
Yeah.
How is it that 8 million people every fall know how to play this shit? I'm a gamer. I'm like a semi-professional gamer, and I can't figure this out.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. And what I don't like about stuff like Madden is your skill at the game is partly predicated on you learning the control scheme absolutely cold. And those people that don't will never be as good as those that know it cold. It's like a fighting game. You know, it has that same kind of learning curve, and Pro Evo Soccer completely removes that because you can pick it up, learn the basic controls, so you can get that, you know, that you can get to that point where you can pretty much go in and have fun with any game, and then after that you can kind of start working on the deeper techniques of it, you know, setting up plays and you know setting up, you know, good one timers and, you know, all kinds of stuff like that. It's a really cool game. I really liked it a lot.
Cool. And Spiderwick.
Spiderwick. Yeah, that guy.
Will never be reviewed.
The thing is, I'm basically putting that guy on the back burner because I really want to get some reviews in for Pro Evo Soccer and for Ninja Gaiden. So those guys are kind of on the back burner for the time being because I think people want to read about Gaiden and Pro Evo Soccer more than they do about.
I care
guys.
Greatly about but... Spiderwick.
Fine, I'll bring some... it up then. I'll do it.
Some do, some don't, some will. I won't.
Aw.
Yeah.
But you know, all got to get done. They all gotta get done.
They all gotta get done, man.
Yeah, I spared you all a diatribe on the nature of Romance of the Three Kingdoms 4, the Firewall. So
thank you, James. Thank you so much for sparing us. Okay, that's the end of new business, and we'll be right back.
Hey, this is Rufus Q. Jones. U stands for unbalanced. You know what pisses me off? Yoga. Nintendo trying to bring their wacky religion into my house with this Wii Fit thing coming out. They think they can get away with it by including good old American exercises like push-ups and jogging. But mainly it's about yoga. And I don't want their elephant-faced women corrupting my kids. You don't see Mario doing yoga, do you? Maybe that's because he ain't got no neck, but also because he's American. And I don't see how sitting up straight is supposed to make me lose weight anyhow. Hey, Nintendo, give up this yoga crap and get back to do what you do best, shooting ducks. This was Brufus.
Okay, we are back with the second segment. We'll start off with Virtual Console, and this week, I think probably one of the better weeks we've had in a while. We have River City Ransom for NES, a classic. James, you were saying that you've used to play it when you were younger, right?
I played it like a decade ago.
Yeah.
Maybe even more far back than that.
Yeah. Did you like it?
I seem to recall enjoying it, yes.
Okay. Well, it's a game that I... remember I had friends who played it. I would see things about it in Nintendo Power magazine all the time. I always thought it looked really interesting, but I never got to play it until today. So I downloaded it, played it for like 5 minutes probably. But a lot of these old NES games, you can kind of learn a lot about the game in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Some of them you can beat in 5 minutes. But this is really cool. It's like an RPG beat-em-up, and that's kind of what I'd always heard, but it's just really interesting when you actually see it put into practice. I mean, you're going around killing guys just like in Double Dragon, you know, or Final Fight, or Battletoads, except they drop coins, and then you can go buy things with them. You can buy food that refills your energy. You can buy books that teach you new abilities. And the other interesting thing is that there's a lot of variety in the character design. Like, almost every enemy that comes up to me has a different face. And that's kind of shocking in a Nintendo NES game.
Yeah.
The variety is really impressive. And the other thing is there's a little line of text down at the bottom, and it only appears like when you punch a guy or you kill him or he runs away. but all the enemies have little lines of dialogue that they say while you're fighting them, and they're all really funny. So the game has some very interesting qualities to it. And the graphics are really good also for NES. So yeah, this is like one of those classic games. A lot of people are really in love with it, and it's the perfect thing for me to catch up on Virtual Console and check out finally after 20 years. The other game this week is Phantasy Star 3 for Genesis. We had Phantasy Star 2 a couple months ago, and I have not played 3. I do somewhere own a copy of it on the Phantasy Star collection for GBA, but I never actually played 3. I only started 1 and 2. And I think the consensus is that 3 is a good bit weaker than 2. They did some things to it that were not very popular, and then they kind of saved the series, or they brought the series back to awesomeness with Phantasy Star 4, which might have been on Sega CD. I don't even know if that was a Genesis game, but anyway, Phantasy Star 3. If you're hankering for
one thing about
more really long, difficult RPGs on Virtual Console, this is definitely one of them.
Okay, well, some quick points about that particular game. The reason it's considered one of the weaker games is that the story is kind of rough, and it was sort of rushed. And there are these different paths you can take, but don't seem to really affect anything. And bizarrely, the Japanese version used parallax scrolling in battle.
Uh-huh.
But in the American version, it was removed except for, like, a boss battle.
That's really strange.
Why they did that, I don't know. And I don't know why they would do that, since there wasn't a substantial hardware difference between the Genesis and the Master System in Japan.
Right.
And it's not like we're dealing with the NES and the Famicom, where there was a fairly substantial difference in what the hardware is capable of. So, don't know.
Weird. Okie doke. Oh, by the way, you didn't mean between the Genesis and the Master System. You meant between the Genesis
the
and the Mega
Drive. Yes.
Right. Yeah. Okay. All right, then. Those are your Virtual Console games for this week. So if you've been sitting out on Virtual Console for a couple of months like I have, it's been quite a while since I bought anything on Virtual Console. I think the last thing was Super Turrican, like in February. So now, maybe a good reason this week to jump back in and buy something. All right, then. We are moving on to listener mail. We've been collecting it for a couple of weeks now, and here we are. We have a big selection of it. And I'll get started with this one. This is from Azagthoth. Azagthoth. He had to actually tell us how to pronounce it, because apparently we messed it up last time.
Sorry.
But Azagthoth writes, "Is the trivia podcast available on iTunes? I can't find it. Help a brother out and post it so I don't have to figure out what a feed is." And you'll be happy to know that we actually got a couple of letters about this, and I did forward these concerns on to TYP, and he realizes it's an issue, and he's going to work on it. There is a feed for it, which is essentially what you get in iTunes anyway. So if you want the new episodes of Radio Trivia podcast edition to be broadcast or podcast to your computer automatically, there is a way to do that now. All you have to do is like take the address of the feed and put it into iTunes. You can go up to advanced and then subscribe to podcasts, and it just gives you a little box and you paste in the URL. And once you do that, you'll automatically get every episode, and it'll show up with all your other podcasts just like this one. So it's not that hard to do, but it does need to be listed on iTunes so people can find it more easily, and he's going to be working on that.
And in his defense, it can be kind of obnoxious to deal with the iTunes system if you're actually putting the podcast together.
Yeah. All right, then. John, you got the next one, right?
All right. Brett writes, "Hey, lads, I can't fight this feeling anymore. The 40 and up demographic... The 40 and up demographic loves Radio Free Nintendo. At last, someone dares to ask the questions that I want answered. Does Sheik have a penis?
Oh,
will
God.
You look up Peach's skirt and brawl? It's not just me, then."
Yeah, we
should
point out.
Do we have to actually answer these?
We should point out we didn't ask these questions. That was the old cast.
Yeah, we've asked similar questions.
I don't know. I thought maybe I missed something on the podcast I missed. But apparently, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, there's some pretty funny stuff about Baby Daisy, but
wrong.
All right. Brett continues. He says the repartee among all the hosts is classic, but I must I can barely
he's struggling.
I can barely hold in my laughter. But I must confess my mad Anglophilic man love for Greg Leahy.
So man love on the
man
podcast.
Man love.
So witty, so droll. Listening to Greg is better than eating fish and chips while playing four-way Mario Kart with Monty Python in the TARDIS.
Please, what is the TARDIS?
That's from Doctor Who.
Oh, okay.
Please open British a shop at Cafe droids. Press so I can finally purchase that Greg Leahy bobblehead.
Maybe we should do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what the real world really needs is some ghastly, bobbling representation of my face.
Yeah. Not just your face, your whole head.
Yeah. Oh, God.
There you go.
You really should
I can't
send
help
that guy,
but
you're
I can't
me.
Help but think that that's somewhat facetious, really.
I don't think so. I don't think so.
I was hoping that could have crowbarred in a few more British stereotypes, or maybe something about our teeth, or the word governor, or possibly.
Aren't we sensitive tonight?
Yeah.
Well, no, actually, I mean, everyone really does love Greg. Like, all my real-life friends who I tell to listen to the podcast, they always comment on how funny Greg is and how he's their favorite one.
He's so dry.
I think if we did a poll, Greg would come out on top.
I'm a novelty.
For sure. For sure.
We're not doing that poll. My self-esteem
no,
is
we're
bad.
Not
going to
do that
poll. Is.
But I think Greg would win it if we did. All right, James, you have the next letter.
Okay. Andy writes, now that the Metroid Prime trilogy is completed, what do you want next from the Metroid franchise? First person, voice acting, less serious, more serious? And what do you think of the consistent story arc over the last three Metroid Prime games?
I wouldn't call it consistent.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
Do you like seeing consistent universes across Metroid games? Go.
Okay, well, this question was sort of directed at me, but although I do have a lot of thoughts on this, I couldn't compose them eloquently enough on the fly for you, but I did just recently write out a lot of commentary on this exact kind of thing, and...
Right.
It's going to be for a feature that you guys are putting together, right?
Yes, there's a feature that actually Greg, it's his idea, and leaving it in his hands to put the thing together. But essentially, that's what being an editor is.
Just
giving work to other people.
Hey, got a great idea there. Get back to me in a month. But, it's a feature on, what the staff's idea of for the Metroid series is in the future, I think. God, I hope I'm paraphrasing
we're still kind of collating some of the response and thinking about exactly how it's going to go. But the general idea is getting a bunch of different perspectives from the people that are most passionate about Metroid that contribute to the site on where the series could go. Because simply, it's just, we haven't heard anything about new Metroid games in a long time, and obviously Metroid Prime 3 we knew about going back to 2005, if I'm not wrong,
something like that, yeah.
And obviously Pinball and the Prime Hunters was already in development, and since then, in terms of new Metroid project, since the whole Dread thing kind of petered out, we haven't heard anything. So it's kind of a natural gap for us to kind of speculate. Obviously, some of the speculation is kind of born out of fear that the franchise may actually not be going anywhere at all. But also, sort of, given that sort of gap that you've got in terms of where could it go, then perhaps we can have some ideas about where it might go or where we'd like to see it go. For me personally, just some general thoughts. I mean, I am utterly unconcerned about voice acting in Metroid. I always that's the first thing.
Yeah,
I
yeah
say.
Really. I think I would prefer for them to take out all these secondary characters that Retro has put in, so that we don't even have a reason to have voice acting.
Yeah, I'm not big on the whole kind of the whole kind of secondary. I mean, in Metroid Prime 2 is kind of incidental. Really?
No, it's actually it's pretty bad in 2.
I found it to be it's because the only real stuff I can remember from 2 is just the Luminoth guy. and the holograms.
Well, that's exactly it, but that's handled really poorly.
It is handled poorly, but it is just like...
Yeah, it's like, why? What's the deal with this character? Why does Samus give a shit about this guy? Why is she helping him? What is she getting out of this? The only good part of the story in Echoes was the video showing the attack on the naval guys. That was actually really well done, and they're basically screaming like, "Ah, get away from me!" Or
and
whatever.
That's very much
that part
like,
was really well
and
done.
And it's very
the
much
Luminati
kind of similar. It's kind of what you get. That's kind of what I expect from the Metroid games over the years in terms of Samus is going somewhere that's kind of derelict and dead. And she's finding out why it's dead. It sounds like, you know, think of the start of Metroid Prime or the start of Super Metroid. You know, in both cases, you go into these kinds of, you know, foreboding places, and you know that's got not places populated with people having a good chat. That's just not Metroid to me. So.
But see, I didn't mind the presence of the secondary characters in 3 because or Prime 3 because it was sort of like they're there for the same reason you're there in many respects. And it does make sense that they wouldn't just send one bounty hunter to deal with the problem. Because it just seems like that would be kind of a stupid strategy if you have to deal with the problem quick.
I've seen that scene on the bridge in Empire Strikes Back. There were quite a lot of bounty hunters there. So
right, because if you want to get something done, just sending one person is kind of a dumb way to do it. Because if something screws up, well, then you have to start all over again.
Yeah, and I guess
the bounty hunter thing in Corruption was... Kind of, I thought, and a sort of the only reason that I think it's okay the way it turned out is that it gives you an opportunity to fight some bosses that are kind of more on your level.
Yeah.
Which is sort of the same reason they included Dark Samus. It's like you're fighting, finally, you have a boss to fight that's your size, that has roughly your range of mobility and your weapons. And it's kind of a Dark Link scenario where you have to use different tactics because it's not this giant wall of Kraid shooting giant things at you. All of a sudden, you have to treat it more like a one-on-one battle. And that's kind of interesting, and that's sort of what the bounty hunters end up becoming in Corruption. But as far as the story stuff, you know, the cutscenes, and they all had voices and stuff, I didn't think it added very much to the game.
Well, I know everyone loved the scene where she was referred to as Sammy. I heard so many people scoff at that scene. It's almost – I'm just glad it's in there because just the sheer reaction it got.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, this is like a general beef I have with most Nintendo games is that I gotta think that at a point, not having voice acting almost kind of hampers what they're gonna do with the story. I mean, like, how much can you really do with a bunch of characters that are basically acting like they're in some sort of silent movie?
Well, again, John, what I'm saying is if they keep voice acting out of Metroid, maybe that will motivate them to keep those characters out.
And keep
also.
That kind of story. I just don't think that's...
I don't want pantomiming in Metroid. I just don't want there to be any other characters. That's kind of what,
it really,
what I would
it really
prefer.
To me, it's just not what Metroid's about. And I mean, maybe
exactly.
It's just I would prefer to focus on the series fundamentals. Like I said, of exploring desolate and kind of unwelcoming places. That and like I said, in Metroid Prime, they did manage to strike a balance because you were finding out things impersonally through your visor. That was probably the best way. You can have some kind
of...
In the first one. Yeah. So you find some kind of storytelling that's going on, but it's kind of unorthodox, and it is totally impersonal. It's fragments.
Yeah, and by the way, the writing in the first Metroid Prime was better than in the two sequels.
Yeah.
Those logs, you know, there were like the funny moments when they're talking about experiments with the pirates and the morph ball and stuff like that. There were and also the way that they talk about Samus as being like the hunter and they're really afraid of her. It's sort of that Halo thing where Master Chief doesn't have a personality, but you sort of learn about him through other people's reactions to him. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of why it worked in the first Metroid Prime, and the quality of that writing and that scenario development through the writing of the logs kind of went down a little bit.
That was a good medium of having some sort of deeper narrative elements without compromising the essential qualities of Metroid as established in the previous games in the series. And that's kind of been continued in some of the subsequent ones, although Fusion obviously kind of went crazy with the computer and all that.
But, you know, I mean, my point was I don't see any harm in having incidental instances where you meet up with another person if it's just like in 3, you didn't really spend a lot of time with any of these secondary characters. You might run into them a couple times before they're gone for good.
Well, I guess the question is just whether it's worthwhile. I mean, if you're going to do it,
yeah,
if it isn't worthwhile, well, then what is the point? I mean, does it do no harm? Perhaps not, but does it do any good? I mean, that's kind of the real thing for me. It depends what you're looking for. But as someone that's stayed pretty sort of tight to just Nintendo games through his gaming life, I'm obviously not looking for story.
Yeah,
that's just revealed by my preferences.
We sort of hit that one question kind of hard. I mean, like, what are you considering the mechanics of the game? Like,
the mechanics of the game, yeah. I mean, that's an interesting point. I mean, obviously, I think we all want 2D back in some form, some way. Because, you know, those games are really, really great. You know, I mean, why we haven't had a game on DS that was, you know, essentially similar to Zero Mission is a real shame, because obviously the Castlevania games work very well on the DS. And
Zero Mission had terrible sales, I'd be my guess.
Well, perhaps that's just it. But it is disappointing to me that, you know, that the 2D series may be getting permanently kind of marginalised at this point. I mean, because those games really are some of my favourite that I've ever played, and I still think there's fertile ground to make new and more interesting ones. Now that they've kind of sort of explored the Super Metroid kind of, I think when you get to Metroid Zero Mission, that's pretty much they've kind of maxed out the Super Metroid kind of template a bit.
Yeah, I think there's an opportunity for them to really push forward in the 2D kind of gameplay for Metroid and do something quite different with it. And I don't know, it could be they're just avoiding that requirement, because they certainly can't just keep cranking out. Yeah, I don't want them to keep cranking out more 2D Metroids the way they crank out 2D Castlevania.
Yeah, because
games.
I mean, yeah. There's
although I enjoy those games, but I don't attach the same significance to them as I do in
Metroid.
No, I
mean, there
game.
Will be.
I'd prefer the Metroid games to be more well
thought
out.
Well, I mean, with the forthcoming one, or the Order of Ecclesia, or whatever, that would be the
run
sixth.
Out of,
the
they've
sixth
run out of
handheld Castlevania since they've since
run
the
out
GBA.
Of. They've run out of the connotation of adjective music term.
Right.
Record music term.
I think mechanically, one thing that you could do in the 3D games that is left to be unexplored, and I wrote this in my comments for the feature, so hopefully this will help ensure that those comments make it into the feature. But the idea I had is that rather than stick with this, the structure of the worlds, and especially in Metroid Prime 1 and 2, is that you go to this planet, but the planet doesn't really have this one theme to it. It doesn't have this kind of unified feel to it. Instead, it's broken up into Mario-like levels. Here's the ice level. Here's the lava part. Here's the jungle part. Here's the swamp part. Here's the city part. And you basically take elevators or some kind of transportation to go from one to the other. And otherwise, they're not really connected with each other.
Yeah.
Not only physically, but also thematically. They really don't have much to do with each other. And then in 3, it's exactly the same thing, except this time instead of taking a giant elevator to get from one region to another, you're taking your spaceship. And that's why the planets feel so small in 3, is because they're really about the same size as the regions from the first two games. So what I was looking at is, I think, a really interesting design challenge and something that would really alter the feel of the game and the way that you progress through it is to tie all this together. And I don't want to say open world, because I'm not talking about turning this into Grand Theft Auto, but I think if you built a planet that was cohesive and that you could literally walk from one side to the other without taking these, I mean, there should be some kind of shortcut system for helping get around faster, but it would be contiguous, you know, like you couldn't get from one side to the other on foot if you want to. And that allows for so much more interesting level design, where you can, you know, there may be multiple ways to get from one room to another through all these different tunnels or different passageways. And you really have to start thinking in a very much a three-dimensional space, not only within a room, but within the world.
Yeah.
And that has not really been done yet in Metroid Prime. It hasn't been done in any kind of game similar to this, but there really aren't any games similar
to this.
Well,
there is.
So I think if anyone's going to do it, it's Metroid.
The, what was it? Not the, Mega Man ZX tries that, and it's just infuriating.
Okay, that's a 2D game, and the level design for that open world thing is really bad.
Yeah, I know, but I mean,
I've played pretty much all the ZX games and the Zero games, and they're all like that. And that doesn't mean it can't be done.
Yeah, I know.
Those games just have really bad level design.
Well, in the issue of the games feel disconnected from their worlds, there's a lot of that in Super Metroid too, because you do get around by those elevators in the same sort of way you do in. In fact,
you do, but the worlds are far more connected.
More
if
connected,
you think
definitely.
About, they're more connected. I mean, think about the place in Brinstar where you go through that glass tube that's surrounded by water, okay? And then you come back later through Meridia and you pass by that. And eventually you realize, maybe with the X-ray visor, maybe just figure it out on your own, that you can set a power bomb to break that glass. And now you have free reign to move between the two regions. But the two regions are not separated by some kind of elevator. They're intertwined with each other. And you can pass through each other, and eventually you can, they connect, literally connect, and now they're part of the same world. And you see that in Fusion, even in Fusion, okay, which is set on this weird space station or whatever, there are ways to get from one region to another through little shortcuts and tunnels and things in ways that you're not supposed to. And it's actually built into the structure of the game. You know, the elevator doesn't work because the power's off, but you've got to get in this section. How do you do it? You have to find some alternate route. That's really interesting, and to take that into 3D, I think, would be fascinating. It would really open the game up to new kinds of levels.
I should say, I think the Fusion, I thought it was really kind of a great rationalization for why you'd have all these disparate environments, is that it's actually a laboratory. And so they're all simulations of different environments. And then you could have all these completely sort of disconnected things actually become connected because it is all actually, you know, this one floating space station. So that was kind of...
Yeah, and then you start to have creatures go, they escape their unit and they go to this other unit.
Yeah,
now they're
and kind of the whole thing for like collecting energy, that all the enemies were really the same parasite and you were a Metroid and you absorbed it. I mean, all the rationalizations in that game are really quite clever and quite sort of unified. So that was kind of nice, but you can't really pull the same trick twice. I don't think.
Yeah, but I see. I liked the fact that they were divided into worlds on Prime 3, because it made it easier to say, okay, where was this thing that I saw? Because you could sort of come up in your mind, all right, it was in a jungle setting, so I need to jet off to this world. And you could say, okay, well, it was ruined, so I need to go to this landing site.
Yeah, but that's not any different than in the other games where you just separated things by region in your mind.
Yeah,
I guess, in art design, it was in the ruins, so I have to go back to the
art design wise. They could get a little more interesting in terms of they tried to really convey different feels to the different places in terms of, you know, obviously the Elysia, the Sky World, had the sort of Chozo feel to it that you had in the first game in some cases, but obviously it was very different with the sort of very like 50s robots and all that kind of stuff. And then and you had the space pirate planet, which was oppressive and glowing and dark and all the acid rain and all the sort of crude mechanical stuff. And then you had the sort of jungle world with the stone architecture and all that. So, I mean, it was nice from an art design point of view. From a Game Boy point of view, not particularly meaningful.
You know, I think you can still keep those disparate
you
art
could,
styles.
Yeah, you could
blend them together more smoothly. You know, have transitions.
I see. I think that would be hard because a lot of the situations they were describing in that game were these weren't time contiguous either. Those stone ruins had been abandoned for a long time, and it would be hard to blend them together without some sort of story conceit. That says, well, you know, they came back and inhabited this area and made it their own or something.
Are you talking about the first
one? No,
Prime?
I'm Prime 3.
Prime 3. What stone room? Oh, on the planet that's
the
like
jungle,
fire
yeah,
and
the, yeah,
Brio?
Brio.
Yeah. You know, Brio is... I think Brio exactly illustrates my point in that you don't even realize until much later in the game that there's even an ice area on Brio unless you read the logs about it. It's supposed to be this planet where part of the planet is fire, part of it is ice, except the ice part you don't get to see until much later in the game, and it's very small compared to the fire part. And the way that you travel between them is you literally fucking teleport between them. There's no connection at all. For all you know, you might be on a completely different planet. There's just no connection, and so that world really has no identity except for the fuel gel. That's basically the identity of it. But I don't think they got across the concept that they originally developed for that planet very well at all.
See, well, I'm trying to remember what the name of the planet had the jungle on it was.
That's Brio. It has the jungle.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I don't know. Well, there's the situation where in Brio where you actually go from above ground to the below ground wreckage of that ship, and I think that's a much more cohesive change in style.
Yeah.
Of course, that's the same situation where you have a lot of things going on there that you don't realize what you're actually looking at until later in that level.
Yeah. All right, guys, we need to move on. A really interesting question, and I hope our listeners are interested in this kind of thing, and we'll check out the feature soon on the website, NintendoWorldReport.com. All right, James, I think it's your turn to read a question.
What? Oh.
Read an email.
Okay. Slade writes, "Hi, I was just wondering what you guys think of the recently revealed fact the downloadable content in Professor Layton is already on the cart, and you're really just downloading an unlock code."
Yeah, I'm not surprised. Yeah.
I'm not either, but it sort of feels somewhat disingenuous.
It's very disingenuous.
Well,
but I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
I kind of figured that when I first heard about it.
I mean, it's just like, why would they even bother to say it's a download, and why would they even bother to do it? I mean, why not just make the puzzles visible? I know it's sort of like a sale feature, but
they could at least include perhaps an alternative unlock method for something. Like,
yeah.
If you haven't got Wi-Fi connection, you can get it another way by doing loads of puzzles or something. You know, some sort of reward.
I don't see why this couldn't just be a puzzle of the week thing. I mean, do you guys remember when Soul Calibur 2 came out in the arcades and it had these time unlock? And Tekken does this too, where basically every week that the machine is in the arcade, a new character will be unlocked. Huh. And the idea is it keeps bringing people back. So you don't have to do anything in particular to unlock the game. It just has to exist for a certain amount of time and things unlock. And clearly that content is built into the game from the start, and it's just being time released. I don't really have a problem with that. I think it's an interesting way to sort of forcibly but fairly add longevity. It's supposed to keep you coming back and playing it. In the arcade, there's sort of an ulterior motive, because the idea is you'll come back and spend more money on it. In Layton, you've already spent your
$30. Yeah, right.
So it's not like they're squeezing you out. It's just to keep your interest up, and I think that's legitimate and an interesting idea. My problem with it is that they're tying it to an online connection, because honestly, clearly, there's no reason really that you should have to get online to do this.
No. Yeah.
And it seems like the only reason they did it is to add the Nintendo Wi-Fi connection logo on the box.
Indeed.
And obviously, there's nothing online about Layton.
No.
I mean, it's just not the kind of game that needs an online mode, and I don't see why they felt like they should sort of lie about it just to get this feature on the back.
The only reason I could see not just doing it by the game's internal clock, or rather the system's internal clock, is that, yes, you can change the time on your DS. You can say, well, now it's March 3rd. You've unlocked everything. And somebody actually did compute when the last downloadable puzzle is going to be. I think it's like mid-October.
But, I mean, it would be like doing this for like Zack and Wiki or something like that. It's just, you know, it'd just be stupid. It doesn't even make sense.
Yeah, except Zack and Wiki is an infuriating experience on its own, so they didn't need to include
I will say this.
It's also $20 now at GameStop. Wow.
Yeah, actually, I picked that up today.
I'm about to.
Yeah, right.
I will say though, this might be kind of disingenuous, but it's not quite as offensive as a similar case. I think it might have been a PSP game, but it had this kind of thing, except it was pay to download in quotation marks content
for stuff you've already bought.
You've already bought it. You've already bought the disc that it's on, but you have to actually pay to unlock it. So that's pretty offensive.
How long did it take for somebody to crack
terrible,
that
yeah.
one?
Yeah. Yeah, I think.
See, I think it's what we're going to be headed towards with DLC on systems that really can't store that much information. And you have to wonder, with the Wii being somewhat information constrained, are we going to have that happen on the Wii?
Yeah, I could tell that this was the case when I first went to the Puzzle of the Week feature on Layton, and I saw that it was using different art. It was using like puzzle specific artwork that wasn't in the main game. And I was like, I know it just didn't download this.
Yeah.
Because there's, for one thing, there's nowhere to store it.
Yeah, I mean.
And plus, it would take too long to download. I was like, this is not, you know, there were like the Tony Hawk games for DS have weekly challenges, but they use the level geometry and the character art from the main game. They're just giving you like a different score to attack, or telling you to do a trick on a different surface that was already in the game. And there it's blatant. It's not like they're not tricking you at all there. It's obvious this is a challenge they cooked up. They're using stuff that's already in the game to do it. And Layton is doing that as well, except they're using assets that you normally don't see.
Right. But I have to I forgot what I was going to say now. Never mind.
yeah.
I forgot to download the unlock code for that idea.
Yeah. Okay. Well, the next letter is from Wee Kraken. And Wee Kraken writes, "Hey guys, what's up? I want to get some VC games. I don't know what to get. I have all the basics like Mario, Metroid, and stuff like that, but what should I get? Also, any games that are good to play with someone else. My wife and I like to game together, so just wondering. Thanks. Just wondering, do any of your girlfriends game? Okay, I feel like I've filled my reader mail duties."
Good job.
Now. Yeah. So as far as the virtual console question, there's so many to pick from. I mean, maybe we could go around and like call out one or two each, but the best thing to do is to go to our website and go to the VC Mondays feature. We've made some kind of rating or recommendation on every single game that's come out on Virtual Console up to like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
So, if you want to go through there, you can sort them by recommendation. Find the thing that says recommended for everyone or whatever, or even recommended for fans, and go through there and see if you're a fan of any of that kind of game. But that's probably the best thing. I mean, at this point, there's something like 200 games on Virtual Console.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard for us to dig in there and just randomly pull out stuff, especially if you've got the obvious ones like Mario and Metroid.
Yeah, and it really depends what type of game you like, too. I mean,
absolutely.
I mean, in terms
yeah.
of just general ones, like kind of classics, I mean, aside from, you know, the Mario games, Zelda, stuff like that, I find the games I keep coming back to are like, you know, stuff like Mike Tyson's Punch-Out, where it's just simple, brainless fun. You can go on there, you know, you beat up Soda Popinski or whoever, and that's it. You know, doesn't take too long. Stuff like that's great.
I tend to like the games that that you kind of get more for your money, like Legend of Zelda: Link to the Past, mm-hmm. or Ocarina of Time if you don't already have that in some other format, mm-hmm. or Star Tropics is a good one for your money. Phantasy Star 2 if you like RPGs.
Yeah.
So
I'd say
that's
in
kind
that
of
same vein, you could go. You could go like
suggestion.
The SNES Harvest Moon, which is on there. Mm-hmm. You can
yeah.
pump a lot
oh, yeah,
of hours
last
out of
you
that
forever.
Game.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. it really depends on what you're trying to get out of the VC. I mean, that's the great thing about VC, is that you can get so many different types of games. You can get, you know, the 5-minute games, or you can get the games you can spend 40 hours on. Maybe
oh,
not 40
but
hours.
If
but...
you want to play together, I would strongly recommend Kirby 64 if you don't have it already.
Because
I'm pretty sure that
that's
game
a
had
question.
Multiplayer mode.
Yeah, they really don't have a lot of co-op
think,
games
I don't
on
think
there.
It has two-player.
I thought it did, actually.
I mean, the,
I don't think so. I mean, you could get River City Ransom.
No.
oh, come on, no, the perfect game, the perfect game to play with your casual gaming companion, Contra 3. Go for it.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe Gunstar Heroes.
Yeah, Gunstar Heroes, but that's a thing. I mean, they're pretty hardcore.
yeah.
If, especially if you bring a girlfriend into it, that's just not going to happen.
If you want a virtual console game to play with your girlfriend, I'd say probably Mario Kart 64.
It's true.
Yeah, that's another possibility. You could also go Lords of Thunder. We have to squeeze that in every time we get the opportunity.
Yeah, there are a lot of shoot 'em ups have two-player mode.
Not that one.
Not necessarily for playing with someone who doesn't know much about games. I mean, of course, we're assuming a lot of things
well,
here.
They
Lee Kraken's wife may be an
they
expert.
They like to play games together, so I assume they're probably pretty decent.
Yeah. So, do any of our girlfriends game?
Yeah.
Bachelor.
Kinda.
That's my response.
I'm going to get in so much...
What,
I said I'm a bachelor, so no.
Yeah. Yeah, my girlfriend used to be into WoW, and then she quit before I met her. Thank God. yeah, she had an N64... When I told her I was getting Mario Kart for Wii, she was really excited about that. And she has not played much Wii yet, though. But
mine's beaten RE4 something like 40,000 times. And it's just
Whoa.
Like, why do you keep playing that game? And then I get some snide response. So I stopped asking that question.
hey, yeah, like, mine likes WarioWare Smooth Moves, but doesn't really play it too much. I mean, if I'm playing, you know, she'll pick it up or whatever, but...
Yeah. Okie doke. Next question. I think, John, why don't you do this one?
Sure. All right.
John's very prepared.
Yeah
I just got to find it in there. Is this the last
just
one? Just got to
set up the teleprompter.
Okay, all right.
It's the last one, yeah.
All right, Adolf writes, "Do you remember when Nintendo released Mario 3 on GBA with e-reader support, and you can put new Mario levels into the game with cards? Well, Nintendo never released more sets of those cards in America. However, in Japan, they released a few more sets. I think the total amount of levels was about 35, if you count some of the more rare bonus cards. Well, Mario 1 was 32 levels, 8 worlds, 4 levels each. So do you think Nintendo was smart enough to compile all of the levels and release them on WiiWare as Super Mario Bros. Lost Levels 2? Not that many people got a chance to play them, and being a Mario game, it is guaranteed to sell. And it's really easy work for Nintendo. Is there any chance that Nintendo will do this? P.S. Can Greg please ship me a free copy of freshly picked Tingle's Rosy Rupee Land, please?
After he ships me mine.
Yeah, well, first of all, I don't have access to a free or any other kind of copy of Tingle's Rosy Rupee Land. So yeah, I mean, it would put it this way: if you're going to probably try and get that new in over here with how overpriced DS games, if you did a straight currency conversion, it'd probably cost you about $55 to $60.
Yeah, I looked into
it. It's probably not worth it.
I looked into that, which is blown away by how much it would cost.
Yep, so no Tingle for Adolf, unfortunately.
Yeah, but I think the idea of releasing the e-card levels for Super Mario 3 on WiiWare is fantastic idea. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not going to happen.
Presumably not.
It's brilliant.
My concern with that is that it was written for the GBA, the code, and which was also written for the e-reader. So it might be a very bizarre situation if they were trying to devise a ROM to run the levels.
Right. Yeah.
Some of those cards.
Yeah, they kind of have to convert them into NES Super Mario Brothers 3 levels.
Yeah.
I mean, there would be some work. It's not it's not necessarily
unless
really
gonna
easy
be,
to
like,
do.
Some entirely separate WiiWare enhanced version of the game or something.
Kind of like Super Mario All-Stars or something. It'd be a similar kind of porting.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's more likely they would release this like as a full-priced game on DS
probably.
Some of those cards weren't
And it would, as he says, it would sell really well.
They weren't just like levels, though, were they? Some of them would like put the cape from Mario 4 in Mario 3 and weird stuff like that.
There was some wacky stuff.
There were some enemies that weren't in Mario 3 that you could put in there.
Turnips from 2.
There's actually a way, and I never actually got this to work. Well, I didn't have an e-reader, but I was. It kind of tempted me to go find one because you can find instructions online on how to edit your own Mario 3 levels, and you can set your printer. It's very tricky to set up your printer to do this, but you can create a template for your printer to print out your custom-made Mario 3 levels onto paper, and then you can scan those into the e-reader and play your custom-made levels on an actual Game Boy without, you don't need any kind of emulator or flash ROM or anything like that. That's a really cool feature. It's, I'm sure, not many people have ever used it.
It kind of reminds me of that thing they're doing for Bangaio Spirits for the DS with the sound thing. That's how you're going to exchange created levels as soon as little modem sounds that you play into your DS.
Yeah.
It's just so bizarre.
Right, yeah, and you can, I guess the idea there is you can record those with your microphone and send them online.
Yeah, exactly. So you can.
That's pretty cool. And I guess it kind of saves the developer from having to deal with online servers and friend codes.
Yeah, exactly.
And things like
I guess
that.
That's the main motivation, but it has this kind of weird kind of alternative tech appeal as well. But
It's very
whether Bangaio will catch on at all when it comes out in the West, I don't know.
Right, maybe they just figured that dealing with friend codes was totally not worth their effort, considering that only 100 people are going to buy that game.
Nice.
Shit, I want it. I'm not putting it down. I mean, I think it looks really cool, and I never got to play the N64 or Dreamcast one, so I'm definitely interested in picking that up whenever I replace my DS.
Yeah, I
want
to play it too, but I mean, I don't know if I'll be able to get, you know, a hold of it. I mean, it's quite possible that it just won't be that many copies of it made.
Apparently, the US version will include extra content over the Japanese version, because that is available to import now, the Japanese version, but if you wait and get your hands on some scarce US copy, you might actually find it has extra levels, so there's that element to it.
Yeah. Well, the word on the street is that it's really good.
Yeah, no, it seems like it's really cool. I mean, I'm a big Treasure guy, so I'll definitely be supporting their efforts on DS, and apparently they've got 2 Wii games in development, so that's kind of exciting.
That is exciting, yeah. Hopefully one of them is a sequel to Sin and Punishment.
Yeah, that's what I'm
Since they're
for.
In the sequel mood lately.
Yeah, more so than they used to be, certainly.
Yeah, they used to have a policy against doing sequels, and I think the first one that they did was either Guardian Heroes Advanced or Super Gunstar Heroes. Both of those were GBA games, and now they've gone ahead and done a few other things. So, anyway, that is our last email. So, thanks everyone who wrote in, and you can keep on sending your emails and your ideas for the 100th episode. We do appreciate the people who've done that. You can send all of that to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. And by the way, this issue came up, or this idea came up, but if you want to send in your question through audio form, you can also attach an MP3, I guess. Don't attach any EXEs, but you can attach an MP3 if you want to, and record yourself. Just keep the file size down low. You know, do some friggin' compression on it.
Oh.
You know? Take the time. Anyway, yeah, we'd love to hear from you either way in text or audio form. And that's going to be the end of our show. So thanks to the crew for showing up.
Actually, I have one more thing to add. I actually have to clarify something that I said before Zach skewers me in the forum thread off of this podcast post. It was actually Zach that completed, our own Zach Miller, that completed Pokemon Diamond and Pearl. And he did it in 216 hours.
Nice.
That's what it took. And if you're wondering why he did that, he lives in Anchorage, Alaska.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Exactly.
Forgot about that.
That was his winter.
So there you go.
He physically could not leave the house. So
it was either Pokemon or getting killed by polar bears. One of the two.
Yeah.
There you go.
So. I've forgotten.
All right. That's the show. So thanks to John, Greg, and James. And we will see you next week here on Radio Free Nintendo.
Bye.
What, you mean the old trip down the vag? The old trip down the vag. Head for daylight.